Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you're going to make it happen.
And Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host the Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, following all 82 Bulls games this season. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_Peck. You can follow my co-host Jordan Malley at Jordan C. Malley. And you can follow us at Locked On Bulls. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Shoot us an email, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And of course, that text and voicemail line is always there for you, our fellow Bulls fans. And that number is 331-979-1369. Again, that text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. We'll get to some mailbag content on tomorrow's show. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Bulls back in action tonight, hosting the Cleveland Cavaliers, trying to win that season series for the second season in a row. Bulls best of the Cavs in three of their four matchups last season. One of a few teams in the league that the Bulls have been able to handle during these rebuilding years. Bulls currently lead that season series against Cleveland 2-1. That one loss being, of course, an early season loss for the Bulls, one of many coughed up leads late in a game. Couple of things that I wanted to touch on today's show. First off, the exciting news that we are going to see Coby White in the starting lineup for the first time this season, tonight. That was announced at yesterday's practice from head coach Jim Boylan, and I think most Bulls fans are saying, man, it's about time. And then on the back end of today's show, I wanted to touch on the NBA MVP debate, because it seems like this has been gaining a lot of steam and a lot of attention on NBA media over the last couple of weeks. And then, of course, especially the weekend performances where LeBron James and his Lakers managed to beat two of the other big juggernaut teams in the league, the Eastern Conference leading Milwaukee Bucks and reigning MVP and MVP frontrunner Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that other team in LA, the Los Angeles Clippers. So before we get to that, back to Coby White and the news that he is going to be finally making his first career start in the NBA. And this is coming while we still are without Zach LaVine, will not be playing tonight while he's still nursing that leg injury. And I think while myself and plenty of us are eager to see what the starting of Zach LaVine and Coby White will look like, even though we have seen a lot more of them on the court together in recent weeks, I think one of the biggest arguments that Bulls fans have been making for, well, why not just start Coby at this point in the season when you're saying to us, well, we're moving the goalposts, it's not about playoffs, it's about development, and here's this, you know, this 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid who is looking like he could be a solid piece of this young team's foundation, to throw him into the starting lineup and see what else he could do. Because in this recent stretch where the Bulls have lost 13 of their last 15 games, they get down early, and they get down big early, and then Coby White checks in and goes on a little one-man tear and brings the Bulls back into the game. And so you say to yourself, well, gee, if Coby White is out there at the start of the game, maybe the Bulls don't dig themselves these big holes. And there's certainly some logic to that argument. And I think the starting or bringing Coby off the bench debate has been frustrating for Bulls fans for a while now. But I think it's important to look at big picture elements to the debate and why it took us so long to get here, and just how much blame you should put on Jim Boylan for the fact that it hasn't happened until tonight. compared to other things this season that Jim deserves blame for. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I have been in the Kobe White should start boat all season long, because if you listen to this podcast, you know I haven't been. I was firmly of the belief coming into this season that starting Satoransky alongside Zach LaVine, Otto, Lowry, and Wendell was the correct starting five. I looked at Satoransky, in addition to Thad Young, as a smart offseason signing, a veteran addition to a young core who could help highlight the skills of the young talent on this team, a.k.a. Zach, Lowry, Wendell, and allow them to thrive while not pulling focus. And that Satoransky was a low-usage, high-efficiency player, especially in the back half of last season where he started for a Washington team that, yeah, wasn't very good, but he was pretty darn good with what he could do for them, and I saw that it was possible for him to make a progressive step statistically with what he could do for the Bulls while not pulling focus from Zach and Lowry. That's what I saw coming into this season with that addition. And to me, starting that guy made more sense than starting a very still wet behind the ears rookie who had one season of college ball under his belt. And for the large stretches of the first half of the season, as much as Satoransky underwhelmed at times, the collective Bulls were largely underwhelming. And guess what? Rookie Kobe White was underwhelming. He had a couple of these wonderful performances where he would, you know, catch fire. Like he had that one game earlier in the season where he hit like six threes in the fourth quarter or whatever. And Bulls fans are saying, I can't believe we're not starting this kid. But if you looked at the entire body of work, and if you looked at Kobe White's shooting percentages compared to, say, the efficiency of the assist to turnover ratio of one Tomas Satoransky, to me, it still made sense that Sato was starting and Kobe was coming off the bench, because he was a rookie that looked very much so like he was not ready for the league. And maybe some of his poor shooting percentages early this season were not entirely his fault because of things like what Jordan and I were talking about yesterday, which was that the Bulls and Jim Boylan told him in training camp, don't take your mid-range shot. That's a bad shot. We're all on board with the new analytics train. It's not that new, but it's new for the Bulls. So, Kobe, don't shoot your mid-range. And maybe if Kobe was allowed to shoot his mid-range and play his mid-range game, his early season percentages would not have been so bad. So you can make that argument. But while the Bulls were insisting on playing that style, it was evident that Kobe was not thriving in that style. And no, that's not entirely his fault. But to me, that's why it still made sense to start Sato over him. Now, then you move into the injuries part of the season. The Bulls are not winning. They don't look like they're going to be a playoff contender. And then you have not only the Otto injury, but other injuries that follow. Boylan was so insistent on hanging his hat on this being a quality defensive team that Chris Dunn becomes a fill-in gap starter. And a lot of Bulls fans at that time were saying, you're really starting Chris Dunn over Kobe White? Yeah, Chris Dunn will generate the steals that Jim Boylan is obsessed with, but the Bulls some nights turn those turnovers into points and some nights they don't. And every night when he's out there starting, Chris Dunn is essentially a black hole on offense. He allows defenses to completely ignore him and double up Zach LaVine, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe if you start Kobe instead of Chris Dunn, that might present some defensive problems, and it might not be as easy for you to, you know, deal with those defensive problems as it were when Chris Dunn is out there. But at least offensively, gee, you take some pressure off of Zach LaVine, and you let Zach LaVine create at times, you let Kobe create at times. I was starting, after a number of Chris Dunn starts that I had to watch and a lot of losses, that maybe we were getting to a point where starting Kobe made sense. And then you get to the All-Star break, and the Bulls are injury riddled at the All-Star break. You know, Lowry went down, Wendell went down, Otto's still out, Hutch can't stay healthy, Chris Dunn is out, and the season's dead. Coming out of the All-Star break, it would have made plenty of sense to me to see Kobe in that starting lineup. Even as someone who, at the beginning of the season, was advocating for the fact that starting Sato made more sense. And then you started to see some of the performances Kobe was putting together in the month of February, before and after the All-Star break. He had those three straight games where he scored 33, 33, 35. First rookie in NBA history to do that off the bench in three consecutive games. And then even in games in this past stretch where he has not been as efficient shooting, but he certainly bumped those numbers up impressively, he was doing more as a distributor. And you go back and look at the assist column of Kobe White's box scores in recent games, and it's six assists, seven assists, eight assists. And to me, that was the final straw to be like, okay, well then, if that was the one thing that Sato was providing, even if his shooting numbers had started to fall, which they have, he still was a minimal risk, minimal turnover guy who could make the right pass and find looks for his teammates. But if Kobe White now has suddenly added that to his game and is scoring in bunches like he has, where Sato has not given you quality, consistent scoring at any point this season, then what's the argument? What argument's left to not start Kobe? Because I mentioned those Sato numbers and how his shooting has fallen off a cliff, and it's pretty drastic. It's bad. Sato shot 50% from the field, including 46% from downtown in 15 games in the month of November. Pretty darn impressive. At that point, why would you be making the argument to start Kobe? Because he was also, Sato was, averaging 5.5 assists per game in that month of November. In December, when the Bulls went 7-7 in their 14 games, undoubtedly their best month of this terrible season, Sato's numbers dipped. He shot 45% from the field, but just 32% from downtown. In January, those numbers continued to slip. 43% from the field, 22% from downtown. A 10% drop-off from his December numbers. And then February, overall shooting percentage, 37.9. That continued to slip. He did bring his three-point percentage back up from 22 to 28. And then here we are in four March games, his field goal percentage 36.1, his 3-point percentage 12.5. That's like worse than the hilarious Chris Dunn 3-point percentage numbers we've been making fun of all season long. So if Kobe is just exploding and flourishing with these extra minutes and adding a solid element of his game as a playmaker for his teammates, where he's given you 6-plus assists every night in addition to his scoring, and Sato's numbers shooting have fallen off a cliff, then what argument do you have left to not start Kobe White? So, again, I'm not going to sit here and claim that I was in the boat to start Kobe all season long. And those Bulls fans who looked at Kobe right when we drafted him and said that should be our starting point guard, I hold firm in my belief and my stance at the beginning of the season that that was not the right call. And you look at what Kobe struggled with the beginning of the season, and the numbers back that up. But as the season develops, and as the goals of the season change, and as the results of the season unfold as they do, and you see what Kobe does with the more minutes that he's given, and you see that the way a starter, in this case Sato, has struggled in these recent months of the season. I mean, look at the numbers, look at the eye test, and say which one of these players is better. Right now, Kobe White is unquestionably better than Sato. So unless the Bulls are not so secretly trying to lose out to help their draft lottery odds in these final 17 games or so, then not starting Kobe makes no sense. Although you've already seen the shift. Yes, Satoransky has continued to hold on to that starting spot up until tonight's game, but as a starter, he's playing 25 minutes, 26 minutes, and Kobe's numbers recently have jumped significantly. There was a stretch there back in January where Kobe was only averaging like 22 minutes a game off the bench. And now, in the month of February and into March, that's jumped to like 34, 35, 36 minutes a game. You've had games recently where Kobe plays the most minutes of anybody on the Bulls roster. So to me, that was an okay step towards making Kobe a starter. I don't care if it's starting or coming off the bench. Let him play with Zach more. Let him finish games more. Let him be out there playing for the majority of the fourth quarter, especially if it's a close, winnable game. And then we'll get around to the starting. And at the very least, I was saying, okay, well, at least he's playing Kobe more minutes. Should he be starting at this point? Yes, probably. All things considered, with the way the season has gone, yes, he should be starting. But at least he's playing more minutes. But now, finally, tonight, we are going to see the natural progression. And I know some Bulls fans think it's, you know, 60 games overdue. I'm sort of in the camp of people who think that at this point it's probably 10 or 15 games overdue. But, you know, once you hit the All-Star break and your season's dead, this kid's young, he's exciting, he gives fans a reason to watch, start him. He deserves the start. He earned the start with the way he played in February. Start him. And to me, unless the Bulls at some point between now and the middle of April say, all right, you know what, all essential personnel, to use the phrase that we've heard recently about coronavirus, all essential personnel, you're done for the rest of the season. Zach, Kobe, Lowry, you're done. And then we can, you know, watch the G League Bulls Part 2 in the back half of March and April. If that happens, that happens. But if the Bulls continue to want to see Kobe do what Kobe can do and actually use these final games to develop him, let him start, let him go out there and run. Because that's been a very rare bright spot for Bulls fans this season. Just a reminder before we get to our MVP discussion that you can hear ads for your local business right here on this Locked On Bulls podcast. If you've been a listener of Locked On Bulls, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Bulls is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Bulls fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. And not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Bulls fans and a predominantly male audience that's well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. So text the word advertising to 33777. Visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising or shoot us an email at lockedonbulls@gmail.com and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising or shoot us an email at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Okay, so now onto this MVP debate. It's funny. I saw a few different things on Twitter this morning. You've been seeing a lot recently being made of the Giannis versus LeBron MVP debate, especially with their matchup over the weekend. And then I got into it today on Twitter with my Outsiders buddy John Sabine, who was maybe just for the sake of argument making the argument for LeBron. Now, John admitted that Giannis would get his vote if he had one, and that he believes that Giannis is the MVP this year, but that it's wrong to say that there's no contest or that there's no debate, and that LeBron James deserves to be in the discussion. And that's where I have an issue, because to me, if so many people, essentially everyone in NBA media circles, NBA fans are saying, well, yeah, it's Giannis, but look what LeBron has done. That is the beginning and end of the debate. if everyone is saying, well, yeah, I mean, in basically in all statistical categories, it's Giannis, but look at what LeBron is doing. The one argument John has, which I would give a little bit of cred to, is the fact that LeBron and his Lakers are the number one seed in a Western Conference that is a lot more stacked than Giannis's Bucks, who lead the Eastern Conference right now. Yes, Giannis gets to play more games against lousy teams like our Bulls and the Cavs and the Knicks and all the other bottom dwellers in the Eastern Conference. So there's that. However, look at the numbers of these two players and explain to me how exactly it's a debate. I don't think Giannis is going to win unanimous MVP this year. Steph Curry was the first to do so in NBA history just a few years ago when the Warriors had their incredible 73-9 season. And I'm not saying that I think Giannis like should win unquestionably unanimously, but I'm saying it's pretty damn close to that, in my opinion. Because, yes, everyone loves to point out, at least those in the camp of LeBron is the MVP and LeBron stands, that he leads the league in assists this year. And, oh, my goodness, how impressive is it that in year 17 of his career, at age 35, he's having the season he's having. And don't believe for one second that I'm knocking that and how impressive that is. But he's also doing so with a younger top 10 player in Anthony Davis. Giannis is better than LeBron in basically every statistical category except assists per game. Yes, LeBron's three-point percentage, 34.7, better than Giannis's three-point percentage of 30.6. Giannis has never really been a three-point shooter. That's not an element to his game. And LeBron's percentage is this season only 4% better. So I don't think that that's like a crazy advantage for LeBron. Free throw percentage. Neither of these guys have ever been good free throw shooters. This season, Giannis is shooting 63.3% from the free throw line. LeBron, 70.4. Guess what? Giannis is still making 2.3 free throws more per game than LeBron is because he goes to the line 10 times and LeBron gets to the line only 5.7 times. Points, rebounds, blocks. If you go per 36 minutes, their steals are essentially equivalent. If it's per 36, Giannis's blocks are significantly higher than LeBron's. All of Giannis's per 36s are a lot more than LeBron's because, in my opinion, that's what you should look at. Giannis is only playing 31, if you round up, minutes per game compared to LeBron's 35 this season. And again, credit to LeBron for playing 35 minutes a game at age 35. It's impressive. But Giannis is basically sitting out a lot of fourth quarter minutes because his team is up by 20 or 30 because of him. Because he plays like an MVP. It's so simplistic to me that the arguments for LeBron being, oh, well, yeah, it's a discussion, it's a debate. LeBron's making a late season run. He's not. From the beginning of this season to now, LeBron has been LeBron, impressively so, at age 35. And we'll see what his Lakers do in the playoffs, and we'll see if we get Lakers-Bucks in the finals, and I would love to see that. But Giannis has been the MVP from October through now. With every advanced metric, with every statistical category, it's Giannis. And let's not forget, in a league that is so often overlooking what players do on the defensive end, people talk about, oh, you know, the quality two-way players in the league and, you know, the Kawhis and the Jimmy Buckets. Giannis is arguably the best two-way player in the league right now. Giannis, what he does on the defensive end is so grotesquely underrated, in my opinion. The Bucks are a very good defensive team, and Giannis is a big reason for that. And if LeBron in his twilight years is still doing what he does, running his team's offense very impressively, and decides to maybe take some nights off or at least some possessions off or some quarters off on the defensive end, you go right ahead, buddy. For all the ways that you've delivered with your NBA career, you deserve that. But don't tell me that that doesn't have an effect on MVP voting. Don't tell me that Giannis's defensive box plus minus of 4, which is more than double LeBron's 1.8, doesn't mean anything in the in the MVP voting. Don't tell me that Giannis's defensive rating of 96 doesn't mean anything compared to LeBron James's defensive rating of 105, which is still no scrub of a defensive rating, but it's not as good as 96. And the eye test backs that up. You see LeBron taking possessions off on defense all the time. And again, he has more than earned that right at this point in his career. Dude's 10 years older than Giannis and has dozens more accolades in his trophy case. But right now in the NBA, Giannis is the reigning MVP and he's still the fucking MVP. Because, you know, numbers. That's why this is so annoying to me. It's like we have to have another person in the discussion, so it might as well be LeBron James. And look, has LeBron been robbed of an MVP in a previous season or seasons in his career? Absolutely, you can make that argument. And I, to the Derrick Rose stands out there listening, I apologize for what I'm about to say, but you can make the argument that in 2011, LeBron James deserved that MVP over Derrick Rose. You can make that argument. And that was one of a couple of years where maybe the league, much like the league thought, oh my God, we can't have MJ win another MVP, can we? We should give it to somebody else. Let's give it to Charles, or, you know, let's give it to Karl Malone. LeBron has maybe been at the disadvantageous end of that and that line of thinking, much like MJ was back when MJ ran this league. And maybe he's been robbed of a couple of MVPs because of it. You could certainly say he's been robbed of at least one MVP because of it. The same thing could be said about Kobe Bryant and Steve Nash winning back-to-back MVPs when maybe... Did Steve Nash really deserve two back-to-back MVPs? That's a thing that happens in the NBA. People get tired of MVPs and then make arguments for different ones. Right now, we're kind of dealing with this weird opposite where it's like, by all numbers and metrics, Giannis is the clear-cut, front-running, deserving MVP. But we feel the need to make an argument for LeBron just because he's LeBron? His numbers don't back it up. Yes, you can say very confidently that the second-place vote-getter for MVP should be LeBron James. You could make the argument that he deserves to be second place in MVP voting ahead of James Harden, ahead of Kawhi Leonard, ahead of Luka Doncic, ahead of any of the other leading candidates. You could make the argument otherwise to say, well, do any of those players play with the caliber of player that is Anthony Davis? If so, no, then LeBron doesn't even deserve to be second. I'm not making that argument. I'm just saying you could. But what I'm saying is it's a moot point. Because it's not about who you vote for in second place. It's about who you vote for as the MVP. And the entirety of the numbers, except assists and a couple of percentages, are Giannis. And if you go from minutes per game numbers to per 36 minutes numbers, it's Giannis by an even wider margin. And you have to give credit to the fact that Giannis only needs to play 31 minutes a night because his team is destroying teams. So the argument of, well, East versus West, to me, that's negated when you look at LeBron and his Lakers. Yes, are the number one seed, and they're playing in a difficult conference, but you can't say, well, you need to give LeBron more votes or more credit because of that compared to Giannis playing in a worst competition. He's blowing that worst competition out of the water and only needs to play 30 minutes a night. So those two arguments cancel each other out. And then you go to per 36 minutes and it's Giannis by a mile, by a country mile. So this whole LeBron stop. And don't even, like, the viral video about, Dave McMenamin, who's basically, you know, spent the last 15 years of his career covering LeBron and is, like, the lead media person who thinks they're a part of the LeBron James entourage, making the argument on The Jump the other day about, well, you have to factor in things like the way LeBron, you know, stood at the front of the league and gave his comments to the whole China controversy earlier and the way that he's handled the biggest tragedy in NBA history of the passing of Kobe Bryant was such great... What the hell? No offense. And again, obviously, the loss of Kobe Bryant and his daughter and these seven other people in that accident was a terrible tragedy. But what the F does that have to do with MVP voting? There are different awards for that. Humanitarian awards, citizenship awards. And give all of those to LeBron if you want to. Give them all to LeBron if you want to. But don't bring that into an MVP debate. Because what the fuck does that have to do with MVP voting? Nothing. Absolutely, positively nothing. It's just, look, and yes, there is part of me who, if you listen to this podcast, if you know who I am, if you read my tweets, you know. Through all of these years of struggling of the Bulls, back when we were getting close but not quite, and it was always the LeBron James team knocking us down, knocking us out, and because of the way that he has, yes, backed up all of the hype around his name from day one, but also done so in a way that I find annoying at times. I find a way to be so self-congratulatory at times. The rally in Miami before they won a single fucking game, the decision, the flopping, the whining, all of the things about LeBron that bug me that MJ didn't do back in a day when he was being just as dominant on the court in a time when the NBA was a lot harder and a lot more hard-hitting than the soft shit LeBron plays against now. Call me an old-timer. Call me old man yells at cloud. I don't care. I will always hold that opinion. And maybe some of that is what makes me aggravated that we're trying to make this last gasp argument for LeBron deserving the MVP more than Giannis does. But mostly what bothers me is look at the numbers, look at the results, look at the records, and you cannot say that LeBron deserves this award more than Giannis. You just can't. So I don't want to hear it. I don't want, well, we need to debate one or the other because we always have to debate one or the other. No, we don't. As I said, Steph recently became the first unanimous MVP. If it were up to me, I would say that Giannis has earned unanimously being MVP this season. I don't think he will be. I guarantee you some people who have votes will use that vote to cast LeBron with their first place MVP vote. I'm just saying, why? Based on all of the evidence we have this season, why? Other than because he's LeBron James. Giannis earned it. He's earned it from day one this season to be reigning MVP. Unquestionably the reigning MVP. So those are my thoughts on the matter. I would love to hear what you guys have to think about this whole Giannis-LeBron MVP debate. Or do you think maybe there's one of those other names that is being overlooked and perhaps more deserving or more deserving of second place than LeBron James? 331-979-1369 is that text and voicemail line. Hop in with your thoughts on the MVP race this year, and hopefully we can get to some of those on tomorrow's mailbag episode. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Just a reminder, as always, check out the other great Locked On Chicago podcasts. We've got Locked On White Sox with Herb Lawrence and Locked On Cubs with Sean Sears as baseball season is getting closer and closer. And, of course, Jay Zawoski does a great job with Locked On Blackhawks. And Locked On Bears, kind of a quiet time for the NFL. But, you know, there's always something going on, and Bears fans are wondering what the hell we're going to do with our quarterback situation here and whether or not we're going to bring in a veteran to battle with Mitch Trubisky. So check out Lauren Cox and his work with Locked On Bears as well. We'll be back tomorrow with a mailbag episode for my partner Jordan Malley, Matt Peck, saying thanks for listening. Enjoy Bulls-Cavs tonight. Woo! What a matchup of a couple of NBA juggernauts. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com